Fuck you, Gus.
Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Palmer.
It's episode 99.
Oh, my God. 99. Red balloons.
It's 99 more episodes than I ever thought we'd get through.
So you're surprised you got through the first one?
Yes.
Every day.
Every day. The fact that it's been 2 years now, and well, almost 2 years now at this point, and we're here, still doing this.
I was going to say going strong, but I think that that would be a right way to describe it.
Yeah.
I feel strong.
Empowered.
Yes.
Yeah. As always, I'm Palmer. I'm joined by Alex.
Hello.
And Sam.
Hi.
And
Hi. You know, when Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, what he really wanted people to say when they answered the phone was, ahoy.
Yes.
Yes.
Ahoy, hoy.
Could you imagine how much different the world would be if that was what, like, caught on?
If that's what people said when they answered the phone.
Why don't I just imagine, like, we'd all be pirates and we'd be living in Waterworld.
Isn't it, like, National Speak Like a Pirate Day today?
It might be.
Oh.
I think NPR did, like, a thing where they're like, NPR.
Yes, it is. It is today.
Did we celebrate that last year?
Thursday, September 19th, International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
I vaguely remember speaking like a pirate.
So what do actual pirates do on Talk Like a Pirate Day? They talk like normal people?
They pillage and they rape.
Okay. Yeah.
The English language with their R's.
Fair enough.
So it is today?
It is today.
Oh, well, oh no, you know what? We were talking like cowboys.
Yeah.
That's what it was, not pirates.
God, that was like 6 months ago.
Shiver me timbers.
You really sound like a cowboy there.
Can you please just...
No, that was a pirate. That was a pirate.
Oh.
Damn.
Nailed it, Alex.
Nailed it.
Really sounded like a pirate there, too.
I'm not very good at accents.
I got a fun pirate-themed joke.
Okay.
What's a pirate's favorite letter?
I told you this joke.
Which one? What is it?
The C.
The C.
I was going to say R.
Exactly.
Ah, you would think so, but it's actually the C.
See, I knew the answer. I'm sorry I ruined your joke. You know whose joke that is? Ben's.
Probably. Not at all surprised.
Everything just makes so much more sense now.
That's a Benji joke.
That is definitely a Benji joke if I've ever heard one. It's a good thing we're going to see what old man Ben looks like here in another probably 30 minutes or so.
I cannot believe
into
you
this
too.
Podcast.
I'm going to tell him that you're going to hurt his feelings so bad.
Did he watch this
no.
with you? Oh,
but I'm going to tell him to watch it.
Well, how do you know it's going to hurt his feelings?
I'll probably be like, actually, Alex, I'm going to need you to get in my trunk.
He's going to push me in there.
Man, we got a lot of stuff to bantz about today.
We do?
We do, yeah. I've been watching a lot of stuff on the televisions.
Mm.
I finished up The Island. We talked about that one a couple weeks ago.
Yes. You were pretty mixed on that.
Yeah, I did not like it.
Not a fan?
No.
Okay.
No. It started off okay. First, like, two episodes were really
good. You told me about, I think you were, like, episode 4, and you weren't really sure how you were feeling on it.
Yeah, and then it just kind of takes a nosedive.
Mm.
It stars Natalie Martinez and Kate Bosworth. Starts off promising enough. Bunch of characters and interesting dichotomies, I guess, between them. You see them split off into sects and build, like, drama. Much like you would in, like, Lost or Survivor or anything like that. But it delves into mindless and horrible dystopian sci-fi. Where these people just kind of end up being part of an experiment?
Is this the one where... On Netflix?
Remember we talked? Yeah, we talked about it.
The Island.
It was the one that was like making fun of what the fire festival.
Yeah, fire festival. Okay.
Yep. It was one of those. The trailer was much better.
Oh.
Than the TV show was.
Okay.
I did not like. Should be avoided. I don't think it's really worth your time.
Oh, well, good to know.
Another one. I'm 3 episodes in on this one, Marianne.
Mm-hmm.
I think I talked to you guys about it already. The series got released on Friday the 13th on Netflix. Totally flew under all of our radars. None of us talked about this.
Nope.
Yeah.
I didn't even really see much about it in terms of press, but all of a sudden, like...
Sounds like a Netflix show.
Everything I see about it... Well, I saw an article in The Cosmopolitan. About
Cosmo?
It? Yeah.
About how Palmer reads Cosmo.
No, it was just I was just like searching it because I was like, why have I not heard about anything about this show? The show's really fucking good. And then like I Google it and like, yeah, it was like Hollywood Reporter, like all the typical stuff, Vanity Fair, and then Cosmopolitan. And I was like, well, that's a name you don't see in this genre too much.
No, you do
not. Let's see what they have to say about this. And they were praising it for its strong female lead.
Nice.
That surprises me that you like it then.
I do really like it.
That's true.
When they're well written.
I imagined you would have closed that article and immediately turned off Netflix.
Ew, strong women. Gross.
How dare you?
I'm waiting for this meme to overstay its welcome and somebody just to write in and be like, I can't believe, you know, how bigoted you are. just be like, I don't know what to tell you, people.
I think what we need to do is turn it into a movie.
About how Palmer is an incel?
Yes. That seems to
apparently
be how you
it's
get
called
the
Joker.
Yes.
That's apparently how you get the feedback these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a not woke movie.
Yeah. So it's 8 parts, I guess, and follows a famous young writer named Emma. She, like many horror authors, finds that her book is slowly coming to life.
Man, it's dangerous being a horror author.
It really is. It really is. But it isn't really like Goosebumps or Scary Stories or anything like that or anything, you know, Stephen King's done. It's actually pretty intense. I'll give you a little bit of a taste. The first episode opens with an old woman removing a piece of her mouth.
And what part of her mouth?
Like jaw area.
Are you talking like dentures?
No. She's carving
teeth.
Into her face.
Okay, cool.
And it ends with a young woman lynching herself.
Oh my.
And that's the very first episode.
So it goes, it goes there.
How do you lynch yourself?
Well, hanging yourself. She hanged herself.
Okay.
She hunged herself.
yeah, it was a pretty gripping way to start a series. And then like the reason it hooked me is because there are like 2 scenes, like one in particular in the very first episode that like one of them, I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah, don't you spoil it.
It actually sent a shiver down my spine.
Ooh, shiver me timbers.
Yeah, I was like, I was like playing a video game. I was like distracted and everything too. So it's just extra points for pulling me out of that, like, oh shit. And then did it again in the third episode.
Oh my God.
That's
crazy.
It's absolutely bonkers. It's been a long time since the show's done that to me. Well, since a movie's done that to me. Since anything in this stupid fucking genre has done that to me.
He wants the tingles back.
I do. I feel I need some tinglers in my life. Chuck, where are you? You remember those?
Oh, how could I forget?
Banged in the butt by my own butt. If you don't know what a Chuck Tingler is, just Google it. It's worth it. if you have Amazon Prime, all the tinglers are free.
Oh my God.
But she has to figure out an ending to her book, I guess, in order to capture the evil that she's spreading.
Okay.
It's pretty good. It sounds lame when I say it out loud, but it's actually pretty good. It's also French, and it manages to capture a lot of that like extreme French horror era in the way that it's like directed and like it's like super gritty, but also has like good humor and stuff too. So it's got stuff to break up the monotony of the violence and the sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
We
mean
yeah. And then Sam and I, we went to go see a little movie.
We did,
and
they didn't invite me. No, I'm just kidding.
We were joined by Danny because Alex had some other stuff going on, couldn't end up making it.
Nope.
He's our typical third wheel standing.
He took my ticket.
Yep. He took. Yeah.
Did you guys get a poster?
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yes, yeah, we got the posters.
Cool.
After they said they
didn't have any posters.
Yeah. Well, they said they didn't have any, and then, like, because it was the same girl that I had asked if they had any more, and I guess she saw that I was still standing there, because I guess people had left their posters inside the theater, so she just gave me ones that
were
she...
Were they any good, the posters?
Yeah, it's the same ones that we saw when we first talked about this movie, with the silhouettes of them walking and the guns.
Oh, right. Yep. Okay. Yep. What'd you guys think of it?
We're going to do the same thing that we did last week.
I just assumed we were going to talk about this later when we were talking about the movie.
When we were talking about the movie?
The DVD release date.
Oh.
But we can do it now.
Yeah, I just figured we'd bring it up now. Yeah. See, we're 9 minutes and 30 seconds into this. I'm going to give us 10 minutes to talk about this since Alex didn't see it. I honestly don't know that I have that much to say about this movie.
I don't think
you always say that, but then you ramble.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. So, you know, get to play it safe, fast forward to the 20-minute mark, and you should be good by that point. We'll cut it off. But, man, this movie, Three from Hell, new Rob Zombie flick. Collectively, all of us like Zombie here. His Devil's Rejects movie, I think, is amongst our favorites, one of our favorites in this group. But the third one, it was like three movies crammed into one, right? Like, it was kind of like part like women in prison film, part Devil's Rejects, part Desperado.
Mostly Desperado.
Yeah, mostly. Well, yeah, it wasn't really the first,
so it's like,
it was split into thirds. Wasn't it only like the last half hour they were in Mexico?
It felt longer than that.
Oh, okay.
So the first part's weird, because the first part is like a bunch of interstitials of like news footage and everything cut with seeing the three of them in their prison cells.
Mm-hmm.
And then it eventually gets to, like, they go like story by story. So you see Spalding's story.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then you see Otis's story, and then you see Baby's story. And that's really where it focuses. Like, this movie is very much about Baby.
So they did not die in the car?
No.
No, they didn't.
They all just got arrested?
It was what, a one in a million chance?
They all got shot. Each one got shot 20 times.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But they all survived?
They all survived.
Yeah, okay. So they show like a bunch of news clips, footage of them like having the bullets removed and like being on life support and getting and recovering in the hospital and blah, blah. And then they go through their trials.
Okay.
And there's a whole bunch of stuff that kind of goes back to what we saw with stupid, sexy, what's his name? Why is his name escaping me right now? That killer that everybody thinks is hot. Ted Bundy.
Oh,
yeah. So they start the interviews. The news crews are kind of interviewing them all, and they're like, "Oh yeah, Baby's hot." Like,
okay.
And Otis is hot, and blah blah blah. And like, oh, they all stand for that. They're just against the man. Man, free the three. And they kind of go through that spiel for a little while.
So they had fans.
Yeah, they had fans and a whole bunch of people kind of like rooting for them. And then the trials end, and they all get life in prison except for us. Captain Spaulding.
Okay.
He gets the death penalty.
Oh.
And so he's out of the movie within 10 minutes.
Okay. So I did read that he was not in the movie for very, very much time.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's actually, Rob Zombie did an interview a couple of days ago with Bloody Disgusting talking about it.
And why did he say that?
Health?
Yeah.
He is not doing great.
Originally the script was written to be the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The whole thing. And, so Rob Zombie says the reason he's not in the movie is not a good one. He goes on to say that about 3 weeks before we started shooting, I got a call from Sid, and he said, well, I've been in the hospital for a while. Then it started to make sense, because every time I go, oh, did Sid come in for his wardrobe fitting? They're like, no, he postponed it again. And every time it was like, did he come in for this or that? He always postpones. And he says, I couldn't figure out why he would do that. I didn't think anything was wrong, but apparently he'd been in the hospital the whole time. So he finally told me the truth. He was in the hospital, and now he's in physical therapy, getting physical therapy. And I thought, I didn't know how bad the situation was, even though he told me the details, which I'm not going to reveal because it's private. But he says, I went to see him. Big burly Sid was now like a skeleton, looked like he had lost about 90 pounds, saying, you know, he doesn't look well. So Rob Zombie says, I started rewriting the movie thinking, well, maybe he can do half of it and I'll just change his story a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he'll get better. And everything was wishful thinking. A lot of like, he'll get better. And as he continued rewriting, it was just less and less of Captain Spaulding, and then it started just kind of spiraling out to the point where the way they worked it into the movie was he was the only one sentenced to death.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, he's out. After, like, you get one interview where he doesn't have the presence to play that character anymore.
Mm-mm.
It's a
very strong character.
Yeah, we saw him when we were at Scares the Care for the past couple of years. He's lost a lot of weight. He's trying. He really did give it his all, especially when we compare it to like Death House, which is the last thing that I saw him in. Like, he really did give it his all.
Of course. I think that these movies are very dear to him.
Yeah.
And so if he's gonna really muster up anything for any movie, it would probably be for a Rob Zombie movie.
Yeah. And
but this is how Richard Brake wound up getting written into the movie.
Okay.
Foxy's character was not originally in this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it shows, because Richard Brake, I really like him. I thought he was the best part of 31.
Yes.
And really good in this movie. He just didn't give him anything to chew on.
Okay.
It was really last minute. Everything kind of seemed last minute when it came to the writing of his character.
That's too bad.
Which is too bad. Yeah, I hope to see Richard Brake in some more stuff down the road.
He was fun, though.
He's creepy.
Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, background for him.
Yeah.
But the parts that he was in, he was really fun. He was a lot of fun to watch.
He
on screen.
Owned the scene. Like every scene that he's in, man, he like dominated it. Mm-hmm. Especially because like I really feel like Bill Moseley kind of just like phoned this one in.
Oh wow. Okay.
It really just kind of seemed like he was just like there.
Yeah.
In a lot of the scenes, mm-hmm. there were some scenes where he did really well. Okay. Especially like there's one that kind of seemed like it was more like homage to Captain Spaulding at the beginning of Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
You know that scene where like he's sleeping with a hooker and he's got his like underwear down around his ankles and uh-huh. stuff and it's like in the yeah. trail. So there's like a scene that's kind of similar to that with Otis, except he's got two hookers.
Oh, nice.
And you just see a whole lot more of Bill Moseley than you ever wanted to see.
You see his penis?
No, you don't. But you see, I mean, it doesn't leave much to be to the imagination.
He's wearing his tidy whities and he's got a gun tucked into his waistband.
Yeah, nice. They're saggy and moist and they're just, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're moist.
It's a lot of Bill Moseley.
But this is very much a Cherry Moon zombie vehicle.
Yeah, okay. It is. And she did really well, like impressively well in some parts, okay. and then really shitty in other parts.
I think she got better as the movie went on. Mm-hmm. When she got to play the character,
okay,
like in the scenes versus like the opening section where she's still in prison and it's like all the press is like taking pictures uh-huh. and she's like doing mm-hmm. her weird little dancing around and her crazy laugh, which I really don't like.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't like. I'm with you on that. I didn't like her crazy laugh either.
But like, as soon as they're in Mexico,
kind of forced.
Like as soon as she gets out of prison, I think her character takes off. Like even like right when she's out of prison and she kills the guy in the front yard and she waves to the old lady across the street. Like there's this old lady on oxygen sitting in her front yard smoking a cigarette.
Uh-huh. And she's just like, watching as Sherry Moon just stabs nice. This guy over or this lady over and over again.
Like she walks back inside and she's like, so I killed this guy, but there's definitely an old lady across the street that watched it happen. So we should probably go.
Okay.
And it's so like dry and deadpan. Like as soon as that line happens, I think she takes off and like her character, the rest of the movie is fantastic.
Okay. Right. And so the latter act of the movie hinges on the fact that at the beginning, Otis kills Machete.
Okay.
And I say Machete because I can't remember his name. Tanny Trejo. That's
yes. it. She kills that. Exactly. I think you said it right the first time, honestly.
And so, what's the guy from Sons of Anarchy, the guy who plays the head of
the Mayans.
Yeah, the leader of the Mayans in Sons of Anarchy. He is Danny Trejo's son.
Okay.
So he runs this cartel called what? The Black Satans or something like that. He finds out that they're in Mexico because that's where they flee to go to Mexico to hide from the police and everything. And so he's just like, well, fuck them. We're going to go kill them. Like once he finds out where they are, he.
And so he wants to hunt them down in Mexico.
And so it turns into a luchador action movie.
It's amazing.
And
that's true because they're all wearing everybody's wearing white suits, right? Or is it black?
The leader is wearing a black suit with a black mask and everybody else is wearing white suits with red masks.
Yes. Oh, okay. So they're matching.
Yes. Nice. And they're all just big luchador masks.
Yeah. They're gigantic men carrying tiny assault rifles just firing into this hotel. Yeah, it turns into some, like literally we both walked out of it and we were just like this was very clearly Rob Zombie trying to do Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Right.
We were both like where's eyeless Johnny Depp when you need
him? It was just like Once Upon a Time or Desperado. We're like, all right, so we've literally walked through the whole Desperado trilogy from Rob Zombie's eyes and point of view.
Yes, he's like, this is how I feel about this movie.
I feel like Robert Rodriguez like was available for consulting at some point during this film.
Beautiful.
Yeah, but it just veers so far off the rails of what we have been kind of used to with these three. Like, it's been so rooted in horror.
Isn't that what people always complain about, though, with Rob Zombie, is that he has his thing and he doesn't ever do anything different?
I applaud him for doing something different.
So, like, the first half of the movie feels like a Rob Zombie movie.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's very weird. The whole scene where baby's staring out of her cell door to the dancing cat and she's meowing to it. Yeah, it's like this woman wearing like a cat head
and
like big fuzzy paws doing like ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Palmer was super triggered. He's already blacked it out.
That scene started happening, and I went between like fits of hysterical laughter to just being like, what the fuck? I think I said out loud at that point, like, what the fuck is going on in this movie? People, if you're tuning back into it, expect no spoilers. Fast forward 5 more minutes. Hit the 25-minute mark, and then we'll be good, I promise.
But yeah, like moments like that are definitely like, it felt like a Rob Zombie movie. It felt like House of a Thousand Corpses and the right. like all the weird like music and video stuff.
Was it kind of gritty also?
Yeah. Okay. There was the scene in Mexico when they're all getting drunk in the bar that turned into a Rob Zombie music video.
It did, yeah.
Dope. So I mean there's a lot of stuff in this movie that is still like you watch it and you're like, okay, yeah, it's Rob
Very
Zombie doing
a Rob Zombie yeah.
doing
movie,
this yeah. stuff. But the bulk of the third act of the movie is pretty straightforward as far yeah. as like how it's shot and how it's like laid out.
Yep. Okay. I will say the biggest things that I really the things that I really enjoyed about the movie, the camera work, the cinematography. Rob Zombie still got a really good eye. The very the best example I can think of for it, he loves shooting his wife, and he yeah. does it so beautifully in this movie. When she's first introduced, that opening scene where she's kind of like handcuffed and she's going down the, and it's all shot in slow-mo, and she kind of shakes her hair back, and she smiles at the camera and looks directly into it. That's so beautifully fucking shot.
My favorite shot that he did, again, is with her in Mexico when Black Satans show up and walk into her room after she's killed the first guy that walks in and there's that shot of the second one walking in and you see like the curtain kind of separating the camera to the guy.
Oh yeah, it's like waving in between. Yeah,
and
yeah.
you see her.
That was a good shot too.
Perched on like a dresser behind him on the opposite side of the door.
Okay.
And it's cool. These again the Rob Zombie shots of like the big face close-ups and everything. The way he framed it where you see her with the bow drawn and like pulled back, it's really, really great work.
Right. Cool. Yeah. And I think the slow-mo shot of like all the Black Satans getting out of the cars in slow-mo, there's like one shot in particular where like he's got like the like a quarter of the screen focused on one of the big ass dudes getting out of the truck, and the rest of it's just like the aperture and stuff on the shot was just like perfect. It was like one of those like if you could just take a still
yeah.
out of that running reel, it would have been such a great photo.
Yeah.
And So like there's plenty of that in the movie. I'm disappointed about the lack of Sid Haig, but I understand.
Yeah.
I don't really want to say like I walked away like super disappointed by the movie, because honestly I don't think that I went in there with super high expectations.
No.
But I have read really mixed stuff on this. There are people that are like really enjoying it and are saying, "Hey, it's awesome.
Yes.
It's more Firefly family. This is what else are you gonna
what
want
else do
from
you
this?"
Want? Yeah.
And then there's other people that are just like, "Well, this ruined the last two movies
for
me.
Them." Okay.
And I don't think I'm really in either of those camps. I guess I'm more in the first camp than the second one.
I mean, I'd be willing That's to fair. See more of the Firefly family with Foxy. Like, if start building out Richard Brake's character.
I want to see him do something else. I want to see him. He's too good of an actor for what they wrote him into. That was such a... I would say that would probably be, like, my biggest disappointment with this entire movie is the fact that, like you've got... I really think he's a great actor.
Yeah.
He was the saving grace of 31. Everything that he's been in, I've really enjoyed him in. Even in the Doom movie.
Right.
Like, which I nobody really liked him in the Doom movie. He just plays such a piece of shit in that movie.
Right.
And he's so good at being just a really arrogant, pompous asshole in everything that he acts in. but he adds a lot of creep factor to
he
it
does.
On top
he's
of that.
He's super creepy.
He's better than that. I would like to see him do something else. Honestly, like, I'd like to see him try to maybe get away from Zombie a little bit, actually try to go into something like... He's, like, what he did in Mandy.
Mandy, yeah.
Mandy was... He was so fucking
and
good
in
Mandy.
He was only
Mandy.
In it for, like, two
He was
minutes.
In there, yeah, but he was so good in
yeah,
that movie.
He really was.
But yeah, we got 30 seconds left. Final thoughts, Sam?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. I don't think it detracted from the first two movies. Obviously, yep. I get it. But I enjoyed it. And I'd probably... I'd say I like this more than House of a Thousand Corpses, but not nearly as much as Devil's Rejects.
Okay.
Wow.
That's all right. Fair enough. Yeah, I don't know that I liked it as much as either of those first two films, but I enjoyed it a lot more than people seem to be. So that wraps it up. Don't worry if you're tuning in. We're at the 25 minute mark. We're done talking about the movie. We're done spoiling it.
I told you could talk about it. I don't think we're gonna have enough to say.
Okay. That's actually all we've said for the last 15 minutes.
Just fart noises.
Yes. Really.
Sorry that I did that on the air.
Nothing but fart noises for the last 15 minutes. Rewind and
hear me fart.
Yeah, hear me fart if you really want to test it. Test that theory. I think that wraps up for the pants.
Yeah.
You guys ready to talk about some of the headlines from this week?
Yes.
Sure.
All right, let's do it.
Headlines.
All right, kicking stuff off with the box office news as per usual. It Chapter 2 has made more money. Who would have thought?
It has.
It's made a lot more money.
Oh, gosh.
Film currently sits, or should I say floats, at $323 million globally.
Oh, my goodness.
It's looking to bring in about $500 million on the low end with a max target range of $700 million.
That is so much fucking money.
$700
million. Can you believe that?
Nope.
That's crazy.
So can much money. Some?
Yeah, you and me both, right? Though this has been marketed, considering its initial investments were only $65 million.
Which is also a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
But here it is, making shitloads more.
That is a really big budget horror movie.
It is. It's huge. Yeah. It's massive. You don't hear about budgets on horror movies like that. Yeah. Unless it's got like Stephen. Well, I guess this does have Stephen King in that shit. What am I thinking? Yeah. That's probably the only reason why it has this kind of a budget. Yeah. So this is kind of marketed as the last chapter, but I promise you WB is going to find a way to milk more out of this before it's all said and done.
I think I was already seeing stuff like as soon as this movie came out about an origin story for Pennywise.
Oh, I mean,
like where it came from.
My father was a German clown.
My father. He was a clown in the German circus.
Oh, my
Maybe
father.
That's his origin story. I'd watch it.
Yeah.
I like a good origin story.
Could be interesting. I think if they do try to do some of the stuff that was in the original script that we read for part one.
Yes.
Or that we saw stuff about for part one that was like really fucking dark and gnarly. That could be kind of cool if they go in that direction.
Yeah, it'd be dark. But see, this movie doesn't... It's not dark and gnarly.
The second, I felt like the first part was not
more
really
so.
The second.
No,
one. The
I feel like the second part was more lighthearted. They tried to be really funny.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of comedy.
I mean, part of that's the casting.
I guess we're gonna throw Bill Hader in something. It's got to have some sort of comic relief, right?
But even Finn Wolfhard playing his child counterpart had lots of jokes.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe it's just different coming from a kid.
Maybe
there's just more like a sense of. Like dread when it's happening to children versus adults.
Yeah,
it's possible. I don't know. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is closing in on 100 million. Huh. It's sitting on 91 million right now globally. It's interesting to note that CBS Films has closed, so the company that produced and distributed this film no longer exists. We'll see what that means for a sequel, but I can imagine there's got to be somebody out there that's indeed interested to see whether or not lightning can strike twice. Ready or Not sitting at 41 million. New question is, can it hit 50 million before the end of its theatrical one? One thing is for sure, Disney has to be happy about producing or about Fox Searchlight.
Yep.
And will probably be willing to greenlight more films like this in the future as a result. It's also interesting to note that the film hasn't been released in the UK yet.
I was reading that. Isn't that crazy?
It's due out September 25th in the UK.
And they haven't had any advertising for it or marketing at all.
Apparently.
That's what people have been saying.
So we'll see whether or not this helps them hit the 50. I got to imagine they can bring in another 9 million in the UK market.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to imagine they could. So I fingers crossed they managed to hit 50 million. I really did like that movie.
I thought that was a fun little film.
Yeah, it was a good little flick. Way better than I thought it was going to be when I went to go see it.
I had low expectations.
It's higher on
pleasantly
my,
surprised.
Yeah, it's higher on my list of the ones I've seen so far this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah, same.
So.
Same. Movie news. Ghostbusters. It's been a while since we talked about the upcoming Ghostbusters reboot set to arrive in 2020, but we've gotten a couple cast confirmations that have me pretty stoked for this horror comedy series.
Oh, you mean this fantasy comedy? Yes. Fuck out of, get the fuck out of here. It's so Lovecraftian. Ding, ding.
You can only say ding when I say it, Alex. Sigourney Weaver will be returning to play Dana Barrett. This has been 100% confirmed. We mentioned it on a couple casts before, but it was still kind of like rumors floating in the wind. But now it's been 100% confirmed, albeit... well, I guess there have been other additions as well. Dan Aykroyd has confirmed recently on an episode of Joe Rogan podcast that he will also be returning. We also talked about this briefly a couple weeks back when he pretty much confirmed it on his intro or interview with on Lost Podcast.
I love how Dan Aykroyd's making like a podcast tour.
Yeah, dude, I gotta listen to the Joe Rogan one. Apparently he just like loses his mind on aliens in the middle of it. And yeah, I can't wait to listen about it.
We should see if he wants to come on our podcast.
We should. That'd be fun.
We should have done it for Aliens Month.
Tell him we'll sponsor Chris Skull Vodka or whatever the fuck is.
Yeah, the skull.
Yeah.
The skull one.
Oh, is that the one that it, the glass skull?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
His?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't put two and two together there.
It actually is pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
I feel like a lot of celebrity booze is garbage.
I just...
Aykroyd seems to put a lot of pride in it.
It just looks so dumb.
It does. It's really cheap. Like, kitschy.
Yeah.
Aykroyd also mentions that he hopes Murray will be on board, offering no guarantee, but fueling the rumors that he's been handed a script and is entertaining the idea. I can't imagine a world where he says no to this.
No, why would he?
I don't know.
What has he got going on? If he doesn't like money,
he might be doing some other indie horror zombie film.
He's showing up at random people's weddings and birthdays.
Didn't he say he was trying to pay his kids' college fund or something? Wasn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Not that he doesn't have enough money already.
Oh, college is expensive, dude. You're right. Unless you're lying about your kids being on a sports team.
No, then it's more expensive.
And then you're going to jail for 15
Maybe
days.
Maybe that's what he's trying to say that he needs to pay for.
Maybe.
The Felicity Huffman tuition payments.
I love it.
Ernie Hudson has also confirmed his involvement.
Yes.
In a fan video interview, he confirmed that he will be reprising his role as Winston once again. We're shooting the new Ghostbusters right now. I'm hoping that you'll enjoy it as much as the other movies we've done. I know I'm having a blast doing them, is what he said in the video. The film also stars Paul Rudd, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, Carrie Coon, and more.
Oh, your favorite.
Wolfhard, you say?
Yes.
Palmer's absolute favorite.
Yes. That motherfucker that won't stop being in everything. I don't know. Honestly, I'm most excited about seeing him and McKenna Grace.
Paul Rudd?
Yeah, I like Paul Rudd a lot.
Yeah. Doesn't everybody like Paul Rudd? Who doesn't like Paul Rudd?
I don't know. Sam randomly hates things that everybody loves.
No, I love Paul Rudd.
That's his thing. He's like everybody's favorite guy, Paul Rudd.
Yeah. Until he is revealed to have like masturbated in the vicinity of
a child.
A dog or something. I don't know.
Oh, are we not supposed to masturbate in front of dogs? Is that
PETA gets a hold of it? I don't know.
Do you think Paul Rudd's going to
take over like a Rick Moranis type role?
Oh, yeah, probably. Maybe. That's what
They're roughly the same size.
Yeah, they are.
I would love to see. That would be so awesome if they managed to convince him to come out of retirement.
Just come back for one movie.
Reprise your role.
I love Rick Moranis. Let's do it. I have like an unnatural.
You love Rick Moranis?
I have like a
dude,
like
he's great.
One of my favorite one of my like all time favorite movies is a movie with him and Steve Martin.
Which one is that?
My Blue Heaven.
No, I haven't seen it.
I don't know that I've ever seen that.
I have like a really like unnatural fandom for Rick Moranis.
Well, somebody like is somewhere. Some one of our listeners is like air high fiving you through the radio waves.
Like me
right
also.
Now. But yeah, it'll be fun. We'll keep telling you news about that. Well, I will, because I know neither of them care about this as much as I do. I'm really excited for this fucking movie.
I'm excited. Probably not as much as him.
Yeah.
Alex is the least excited about doing this as an episode once it comes out.
This is the I don't know. Ghostbusters could break Palmer and us it could break us apart.
The Black String shares a clip of Frankie Muniz mutilating himself over on Bloody Disgusting. Honestly, this movie looks like it's going to be horrible, but I couldn't help it because it's Frankie Muniz.
I thought Frankie Muniz was dead.
Not dead.
Yeah, he's not dead. He's very much alive. Clearly. The horror blog site that everybody loves to hate featured a clip of upcoming psychological thriller called The Black String. In it, Frankie Muniz of Malcolm in the Middle fame, and just in case you didn't know, slices open his wrist and appears to be tugging at a tendon-like black string from his inside his arm. The clip, which hovers around the one-minute mark, features the television actor screaming in agony as a woman with a bizarre cult leader esque ability, I guess, tells him to focus on the self-mutilation.
Honestly, I got like a more like a witchy vibe
for her. Yeah, that's probably some sort of brainwashing ability.
I feel like she was not trying to help him?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Feel like she was like a witch.
Watch this movie be absolutely amazing.
I mean, we're talking about it.
Yeah, we are talking
about it. I'm going to watch it next week.
I probably am too. That's the problem.
He also looked and sounded a lot like...
Frankie
Muniz? No, I was thinking Jesse from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, actually.
Aaron. Oh, Aaron Paul?
Yeah.
I could see him screaming, bitch, over and over again.
Yeah, science, bitch! So apparently the reason that Aaron Paul's not in a lot of things is because he auditions terribly.
Really?
Is what I read. Yeah, that's why he's not been in more stuff. Because he's really shitty in auditions.
I could see that being the case. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think he's that great of an actor.
Science, bitch. Personally. No.
He's just not.
But he was amazing in Breaking Bad.
He was. He was quite good.
I think he must have done meth in the past.
Probably.
During Breaking Bad.
You think so?
Well, the character's like super naive in that show, right? So like he's... I kind of imagine he would be that way in real life. So.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I said, honestly, this movie looks awful. Muniz's acting is unconvincing at best, but the whole thing, you know, like the upcoming Fred Durst, John Travolta project.
No, you shut your mouth.
Is such a goddamn train wreck looking already. So I'll be tuning in to see what this is made of.
Did you just say Moose looks like a train wreck?
It does. An awesome train wreck.
No, this looks worse than Moose.
It does.
That's why I didn't say that this was an awesome train wreck. It's just a train wreck. The DVD cover for it's this is it just... Is horrendous.
It is. It's really bad.
Yeah. It's so bad.
It looks like something that you see from like a movie poster in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
He has
He has like a little Chinese scriptured sword tucked into his pants.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like it's trying
to be
like.
It's not a sword, Alex.
A young adult novel.
You're right.
This is coming out on VOD and Blu-ray next week, so I'm sure Sam will remind you about it in the Now Slang.
Paranoia cuts deep, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, it does, apparently. Frankie Muniz looks like he knows all about this. I can't. This is cranking it to 10 for me right now.
Be into it.
I just couldn't help but it had to go on the list.
Alex, I think I know why you hate the DVD cover.
Why?
This looks like a John Cusack DVD cover.
Oh my god, it does.
I'm pretty.
You heard it here, folks. Frankie Muniz is the new John Cusack.
Well, I need to see the DVD cover for that.
1408.
Wasn't it for a keyhole for 1408?
Oh my god.
It was the key, and it was John Cusack on one side and Samuel L. Jackson. But it has a definite like John Cusack.
Yes, it
should
does.
Be in this movie vibe.
Yep.
Here we go. This one. This poster.
For which movie?
It's the Chinese poster for 1408.
Yep.
I see that being the case.
I hate John Cusack.
You do hate John Cusack, and I kind of love you for it. TV news. Showtime survival thriller series, The Yellow Jackets, just Yellow Jackets, has an impressive name attached to direct. The upcoming show, created by Ashley Lyle and Bart Nickerson, mm-hmm. is about a group of wildly talented high school soccer players who become the lucky survivors of a plane crash deep in the Ontario wilderness. Yellow Jackets chronicles their descent from a complicated but thriving team to a warring cannibalistic clan while also tracking the lives they've attempted to piece back together. Nearly 25 years later, proving that their past is never really past, and what began out in the wilderness is far from over. The premise sounds very Lord of the Flies.
I was going to say, but yeah, you called it a cannibalistic Lord of the Flies.
But what makes it especially interesting is the fact that Karen Kusama, is attached to direct the show's pilot episode. For those that aren't aware, Karen did Jennifer's Body, which was poorly received upon release, but has become quite a bit of a cult movie, garnering a lot of praise. I feel like I see every couple of months a new article in the horror community
about Jennifer's Body.
Yeah, talking about how good this movie is, okay. Like how ahead of its time it was.
Right.
And the indisputably excellent film, The Invitation.
Yes.
That movie's so fucking good.
So good.
I'm very interested in seeing what this series is capable of.
Cool.
Can't wait to see what it brings to the table.
So I just need to go back to John Cusack once.
Once I open up that box, there's no putting the lid back on.
I just
want to
say that I do really like Hot Tub Time Machine.
Yes. So
that's a great movie.
That is... All right.
It's funny.
Okay.
But she likes it not because of John Cusack.
No, definitely
She
not.
Likes it because of Rob Corddry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because Chernobyl.
There's a reason John Cusack wasn't in the sequel.
Oh, okay. Because he's the worst.
Is it because you hate him?
Yeah.
Specifically because Alex hates him.
I wrote a fucking strongly worded letter.
Yeah. I don't put it past you when it comes
demanded
to John
Cusack. Demanded Chernobyl and John Cusack's execution.
Yep. More Chernobyl, less John Cusack.
The first teaser trailer for Castle Rock Season 2 has been released, and it focuses on an unlikely icon, Annie Wilkes. I don't know. It just wouldn't be an episode of Terror Incognito if we didn't at least mention something about Stephen King.
Stephen King thing.
So, here we are. Hulu has released a minute and a half long teaser for the second season, jam-packed with references to all sorts of stuff in the King universe. But this seems to primarily focus on the main character of Misery. And she's just randomly dropped into the Stephen King universe. With Castle Rock, I don't know. Apparently this last season was... I didn't watch it. Did you end up watching this?
Yeah.
Yeah? What did you think of it?
I liked it.
People... Apparently the consensus is that the last half of last season was awful.
I wouldn't say it was awful. It could have been better, probably, but I thought it was good.
A lot of people really didn't like the way
people
it ended.
People just are so cranky.
Throw
John Cusack in there.
It is the internet.
I'll agree.
Yeah.
I'll definitely watch the second season, especially if it is focusing on Annie Wilkes.
Yeah, that's
Kathy Bates gonna show up?
I would fucking shit my pants.
Are we gonna get a Kathy Bates sighting in season 2 of Castle Rock?
I hope so.
She's not.
For Alex's sake,
she's
not
in American Horror Story.
Yeah,
that's true.
She's not. She isn't. That's true.
So maybe she's in Castle Rock.
Hmm.
And she's not in that.
I didn't put that together.
That weird stoner
is some deep
show.
Cut shit right there.
No, it's true. The synopsis for the second season states, in season 2, a feud between warring clans. I'm noticing a thing with warring clans.
People are into the clans.
Yeah, apparently.
Warring clans.
Comes to a boil when a budding psychopath named Annie Wilkes, Stephen King's nurse from hell, gets waylaid in Castle Rock. Fans of the cast, if you watched season 1 and you dug it, let us know in the thoughts. Email us, hit us up on social media, let us know, because... I'm genuinely interested in finding out. A lot of people seem totally okay with the fact that this is like something out of left field. I'm not sure. I didn't watch the first season, so I really can't like judge one way or another. But a lot of the comments that I was reading, and a friend of mine that I was talking to who did watch last season and also was very upset with the way it ended, have all been like, yeah, it's an abrupt turn, but I don't care. I'm just glad they're not continuing where I left off.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. Maybe they're just abandoning what they had established already and just
trying something new.
Yeah. So let us know your thoughts. Let us know what you think of Annie Wilkes being the primary antagonist, I guess.
And it's Lizzie Kaplan who's playing Annie Wilkes, right?
Yeah. She looks and sounds a lot like
her. She does. She has like the hair going on. Yeah. She's creepy.
Yeah. It's quite good. Blu-ray VOD news. Vinegar Syndrome's gore cut of Tammy and the T-Rex releases its box art.
I'm so excited for you to buy this so I can finally see it.
I know. I want to watch it.
I'm pretty sure I'm the only person in the world that is actually excited about this. Like, in the world. Not just on this podcast, but actually
like
in the world.
In the whole wide world.
Like, I'm excited to see this. I'm probably not going to buy it.
No.
But I know you're going to buy it.
Yes.
So the day it shows up, I'll come over and watch it.
Okay. All right. And I know that I'm the only person on this podcast that's super excited about it. The upcoming 4K restoration of the original R-rated cut of the film has some cheesed out, high contrast embossed looking graphics. Prominently featuring the one and only Denise Richards, overshadowed by her Paul Walker turned T-Rex boyfriend, and lots of blood. The art, which was done by Tom Hodge, who also goes by the Dude Designs, was released exclusively over at Bloody Disgusting a few days ago. We'll include a link to it in the podcast description if you do want to check it out. The Blu-ray is going to be a very limited edition, according to Vinegar Syndrome. It will be available starting Black Friday weekend, November 28th to December 2nd, with a 48-hour-long pre-order going live September 19th and ending on the 20th. So if you're listening to this cast the day of release, you'll be able to get this one. Otherwise, guess you're going to be waiting until Black Friday. I will be going home tonight to get this.
I'm surprised you haven't pre-ordered it already.
No, I have not.
No.
But I will be. I guarantee you I'm going to get one of these pre-order copies.
When we watch it, we should light a candle for Paul Walker. Maybe he's somewhere out there as a big T-Rex.
Wrapped around a telephone pole. check it out over at vinegarsyndrome.com. Next up, Rob Zombie's 3 from Hell is stabbing its way on the Blu-ray. Look, we had fun with the film. It wasn't Zombie's best, but it was better than 31, which isn't much of a feat, but it is what it is. If you didn't get a chance to see it in theaters and you want to check it out, after we piled praise all over it in our absolutely stellar review of the film, you'll have an opportunity to do just that when it's released on 10/15 in the U.S. and 10/14 in the U.K. Well, I guess it'd be 14/10 if you're going by U.K. dates.
Yep.
You fucking...
Red coat.
Go have a biscuit and drink some tea.
That sounds delightful.
It does sound really good. Why would I just use that as an insult? That actually sounds wonderful.
And you do it every day at like 2 o'clock. You take a break. That sounds nice. No,
mushy peas and boiled meat. Dude, I like
the way the Spanish handle it, though. They actually like fucking everything closes down for like 2 hours in the middle of the afternoon. And they just like go eat lunch or like have some drinks, go take a nap.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
Apparently there's a huge electric surge in the UK around 2 o'clock, because that's when everyone turns on their electric kettles.
Oh yeah,
like outside of Japan, we're one of the only countries that views working the way that we do it,
and who eat at their desks a lot.
Well, China does too.
Yeah, China, I don't know if it's quite to the extent though.
Well, they don't have the labor laws that we do, so I'd say it's probably worse.
It would probably, I think it would depend on what type of job you have also.
Yeah, I guess that's
in
true.
China.
Yeah.
Particularly.
Don't be designing people's iPhones, let's put it that way.
Don't be mining for their batteries either.
Currently it's
only a matter of time until those jokes made it into the episode today.
Yep. It's currently it's available. Speaking of mined plastic and stuff used for film, currently it's going to be coming out on DVD and Blu-ray and 4K Ultra HD. It's going to be released with a 95-minute making of documentary called Hell and Back, which I actually am genuinely interested in checking out. And then a Rob Zombie commentary track. See, A24, that's what you should package when you release physical product. You dumb fucks.
For a second, I thought we were still talking about the T-Rex movie.
No, we're talking about 3 from Hell now.
I mean, I'd watch a 95-minute documentary of Tammy and the T-Rex as well.
I would. I don't know why that isn't a thing is beyond me.
Vinegar Syndrome, get your shit together.
R.I.P. Paul Walker.
Crawl is also coming to Blu-ray. Alexander Aja's recent alligator epic did pretty well in theaters, at least recuperating its money and ending up a success for Paramount.
Good.
Fans who missed it will be able to check it out when it comes to home video soon. It'll be out on VOD on 9/24 and Blu-ray/DVD on October 15th. That's a busy day for horror releases.
It is.
I think Jane Silent Bob comes out that day, too.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, the new one.
Speaking of Jane Silent Bob, isn't there a 90-minute documentary on Tusk on YouTube?
Yeah, it's up on YouTube right now for free.
Check it out.
Yep. If you love Tusk as much as we do.
You're We're getting tattoos.
We are getting walrus tattoos. That is not a joke.
No.
Those are going to happen.
I can't wait for this moment.
They will happen.
Is it going to be in a prominent place, like visible, or are we going to put it somewhere that's generally
I'm
going to
put mine on my thigh.
Oh, man. I don't know. Maybe my wrist?
Oh, that'd be a good one plan, too. The three stages of Justin Long.
We just have to figure out who's getting which stage of turmoil that he's in.
The question is, which one of us is getting it on the head of their dick?
Me.
Alex has the biggest dick here. I mean,
today I learned.
I have a dick.
She's got the most available space.
She does, yes. She has a lot of real estate right now that,
you're right.
That neither of us do. What the fuck was I talking about? I got lost on Tusk tattoos.
We're talking about Crawl.
Oh, right. Crawl. That's a thing.
And you want to know the name of a good special feature? Hmm. Category 5 Gators.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great special feature name.
Yeah. The physical release will have a bunch of special features on it, including a beneath crawl featurette, alligator attacks, an alternate opening.
Oh.
Which I'm kind of intrigued. Yeah, which I'm kind of intrigued on seeing. An introduction to said alternate opening and deleted and extended scenes. Still more than what A24 has released.
You right.
Physical stuff lately. Looking forward to seeing this one. Finally giving it a shot.
Yep.
I wanted to check it out in theaters, but never got around to it. So this will be fun.
I feel like it wasn't in theaters very long.
I agree.
Despite getting phenomenally solid reviews.
Yeah. Pretty good reviews. The horror community seemed to like it. Uh-huh. And it recuperated money. It was one of those get in, get out, I think.
Yeah. For
Paramount. Maybe if it lingered too long, it would have
started to lose money a little bit.
Started to lose
money. Yeah. Sam.
Yes.
What was slaying this week?
Oh, a whole lot of really good stuff.
All right. Well, let's slice off a little piece.
All right.
A little piece of this next segment that we like to call Now Slaying. Sam, what do we got?
All right, so kicking off this week on the 17th from Vertical Entertainment on VOD, Reborn. Stillborn baby girl is abducted from a morgue.
Ew.
What?
Stillborn baby?
A stillborn baby.
Stem cells.
Stillborn baby girl, mm-hmm. specifically, is abducted from a morgue and brought back to life by electrokinetic power. On her 16th birthday, she escapes captivity and sets out to find her mother, leaving a bloody trail of destruction behind her.
Dude, is this being committed by that one company that we keep reading about? What the fuck is their name? Oh. The one that's like going to bring the dead back to life and cause the apocalypse?
Oh, that's right.
That one in Philadelphia.
The trailer for this doesn't look great, but the kills look fantastic.
Yes.
Who plays the... Do you know who plays the stillborn girl that is...
Like the
16?
Actual... Oh, this, it's her name is Kaylee Gilbert.
Ah, yes, Kaylee Gilbert. I know her well.
The famous Kaylee Gilbert.
The famous Kaylee Gilbert.
It's also got Chaz Bono.
Chaz Barbara fucking Crampton, Bono?
Chaz and Michael Parra in it.
Did you just say Chaz Boner?
No. I would never.
Next up this week, we got Polaroid. So I've been following this one for a while. This was supposed to come out middle of last year, I believe. But it's finally coming out on the 17th from Vertical Entertainment and Dimension Films, uh-huh. which I thought went defunct like 20 years ago.
After Scream.
Yeah. This one's going straight to VOD. A high school loner, Bird Fitcher, has no idea what dark secrets are tied to the mysterious Polaroid vintage camera she stumbles upon. But it doesn't take long to discover that those who have their picture taken meet a tragic end. Mm. Kind of like The Ring, where if you watch it, you die. If you get your photo taken in this... There's like a shadow that shows up in the photo, and if it's in your photo, it's going to kill you next.
Kind of like that movie with, what's his name? And they're in Japan. You guys remember that movie?
The Grudge?
No.
The Ring?
No. Shudder. With the guy from Dawson's Creek?
Not
James Vanderbeek?
I do not. Huh. I do not remember this one.
All right, whatever.
But a little...
I don't know how else to tell you.
But they're comparing this movie to The Ring meets Final Destination. And it is the directorial debut of Lars Klevberg.
Who's that?
Who the fuck?
The guy that did Child's Play.
Oh.
I think I'm saying his name right. I don't know. He's Norwegian, so it might be like Kleiberg or
Kleberg.
Next up, we all watched the opening episode to this last night. American Horror Story 1984 finally came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's on FX on Wednesday nights at 10. And this year, Camp Redwood, Mr. Jingles is on the loose.
Mr. Jingles. And you can watch it just on FX.com, even if you don't have...
Yeah, that's where I watched it last night.
As long as you don't mind watching commercials, you can watch it, even if you don't have cable.
Yep. Also, maybe Hulu?
I don't know. I didn't check Hulu.
Okay.
Probably.
Yeah, because I know a lot of the other ones are on Hulu.
I know they're on Netflix,
yeah.
But the older seasons.
Next up on Shudder on the 19th comes Hell House LLC Part 3, Lake of Fire. That name is so long. In the final installment, guests both past and present will be forced to battle for their souls as all is revealed about the infamous Abaddon Hotel and the evil that dwells there. Set 1 year after the events of Hell House LLC 2, the Abaddon Hotel... Jesus Christ. This haunted locale is on the verge of being torn down when it's purchased by billionaire Russell Wynn as the new home for his popular interactive show Insomnia. He invites journalist Vanessa Shepherd and her crew to record everything happening inside the hotel leading up to the show, but they soon encounter a more nefarious plot, one that threatens to unleash a veritable hell on Earth.
How predictable.
Next! Corporate animals. We've talked about this one in the past.
Have we?
Yes.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
Who didn't?
Oh, right.
It's clicking. Yes. September 20th from Screen Media Films on VOD. Lucy, played by Demi Moore, is the egotistical megalomaniac CEO of Incredible Edibles.
Oh, that's right.
America's premier provider of edible cutlery. In her infinite wisdom, she leads her staff, including long-suffering assistants Freddie and Jess, on a corporate team-building caving weekend in New Mexico. But when disaster strikes, not even their useless guide Brandon, played by Ed Helms, can save them. Trapped underground by a cave-in, this mismatched and disgruntled group must pull together in order to survive.
Is this a horror comedy, or yes. what is this?
Horror comedy.
Okay.
Much like Ghostbusters.
No, that's much more fantastical.
Next, we got Villains coming out on the 20th from Alter, which is the horror brand associated with Gunpowder and Sky. On VOD, Mickey and Jules are lovers on the run, headed southbound for a fresh start in the Sunshine State. But when their car dies after a gas station robbery, they break into a nearby house looking for a new set of wheels. What they find instead is a dark secret and a Sweetest Pie pair of homeowners who will do anything to keep it from getting out.
Knock, knock. Ooh,
hello, I'm Sweetest Pie.
This one's starring Micah Monroe and Bill Skarsgård, the dead-eyed, not attractive one.
Did I get that right? He wasn't attractive. I just said he was not the...
So how is Stephen King attached to this?
He's the lesser attractive of the...
The less attractive dead-eyed Skarsgård.
Yes.
All right, got it.
Got it.
And finally this week, also on the 20th, this one coming from Momentum Pictures, Blumhouse and Divide and Conquer is a joint venture on VOD. Evan, played by Sean William Scott, values family above all else, and that anyone who gets between him, his wife, and newborn son learns that the hard way. But when it comes to violent tendencies, it seems the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. This description's fucking terrible. So he's like a youth counselor of some sort, and seems to be a serial killer a la Dexter, but specifically goes after child abusers.
The Chomos, right.
Yeah.
You a chomo. Yeah. You a chomo.
But this one looks really good, so I'm really excited about this one. But that's all we got this week.
That's it.
That was all.
That's all.
So lots of options. I'm stoked on most of these. Hell House, I don't really care about, but I never watched the first two, so that's probably why I don't care about it.
Hell House, LLC.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't say number the whole two. Fucking name.
Something, something.
All 13 words in the title of this movie. But yeah, that's it.
Great. Sweet. All right. Well, let's talk about this week's indie film. This one was kind of a last minute addition to our indie horror list, but it was an interesting one. It's our first indie slasher film I think we've kind of reviewed.
Yeah.
There's one that I would like. I guess there was like 420 Massacre, but I don't know if that would we call that indie?
No, it had David Arquette in it.
No, that was.
No, that's Trippin'.
Yeah, that was.
Day Tripper.
I can't remember.
I'm getting. We watched them on the same day, though, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so.
Oh, 420.
Yeah, 420 Massacre.
I guess
you could call that one an indie slasher.
Yeah, they're in the woods.
Yeah. All right. So, our second indie slasher. The first indie slasher we've covered that has a budget of $500.
There you go.
It was also made here in Virginia.
It was.
So, let's get around to it. Let's talk about it. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
She just wants her D to be sunny.
Yeah. Is that too much to ask for?
It is.
I mean, you grew the D on your own.
I did. I just really feel like Sunny Delicious right now.
I don't think you can grow Sunny D, though. Like, that's like a delight. It's like American cheese. Oh. That only appears in
Kraft Singles.
I want a Kraft Single cheese sandwich and Sunny Delight. That sounds delicious.
It sounds like something.
It sounds orange.
Yeah, it does.
There's some Kraft macaroni on there.
Oh, yep.
It does sound quite good. It does.
Quite good.
Quite good. It's quite good. This week's movie is Psychopath. It's written and directed by Robert Elkins. It stars Kylie, I think it's Billetter. I think that's how you pronounce the last name.
Billetter?
Billetter.
Maybe.
Might be Bill Eater.
One of those three.
One of those three. Palmer is terrible, so who cares?
We're close at that last name.
Glenn Leftwich. I'm pretty sure that one's right. Lawrence Weinsick, I believe.
Weinsick?
Weinsick, maybe. Danae West. Russell A. Bryan. Miguel Girona Jr. Kitty Crystal. Luna Duran. Maybe Luna Duran. It's probably Luna Duran.
Jeremy Ambler. Now I'm just hoping it's Luna.
Yeah, so am I, kind of. Sometimes when I get the names wrong, I always like to just pretend that's what it was in the first place.
Just commit.
Lori Janey, Kevin Vincent, Miranda Vincent. I think that might be a brother-sister duo there, maybe. Jalen Hunter, Robert Elkins, as Freddy.
Yep.
You did a good job as Freddy, buddy. Fuck Gus.
Fuck Gus.
Jody Rowley. And, yeah, that's about it. So everybody kind of has, like, bit piece roles in this movie. There's not a whole lot of, like...
Long character for, development.
Yeah, except for...
the twin.
Yeah, the twin, Kylie Billetter, who plays Sarah and Tara, and Glenn Leftwich, who plays Gus. The rest of them are kind of bit roles throughout the entirety of the movie. They're kind of pieces that kind of move the plot forward. The storyline is Sarah misses a desperate call from her stranded sisters. She sets off with her friends to find... her in the backwoods town of Raven's Neck, home to a brutal escaped mental patient. Look, it's a slasher. It's an indie slasher. That's really about all the story there is.
Yeah.
So we're just going to talk about guts. We're just going to talk about the bit pieces here. The things that we liked, things we didn't like, kind of go about it in the old-fashioned way, you know?
I love it.
We're not going to go for a blow-by-blow here. But, here I go, going through blow by blow. So,
good job.
I do like the way that this film opens up. There's a house that's predominantly featured throughout the entirety of this movie. It resembles something very Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, the setting locations for this film is very good.
Yes, yes, I really did enjoy
them. It sets the mood.
You can tell it was he either got permission to use this place or he didn't and he just found it.
I love it. I hope he did it.
I hope he didn't and that he just found it because there's like black mold all over the fucking walls.
But furniture still there.
Yeah, there's like furniture still. It just looks like it is. It's a old dilapidated rundown home.
Farmhouse, yeah.
That you see in the middle of rural Virginia all over the place.
This is Chesterfield, right?
Was it in Chesterfield?
I think it's Chesterfield.
I was going to say that or Ashland, but I couldn't tell.
Well... either way, you see this kind of shit all over the place as you start getting out into the boonies of Virginia. But it's perfect. It's a great setting for this movie, and it's a great setting for a killer to reside, too, especially a mental patient like this one. The introduction is pretty impressive. I mean, especially when we look at stuff that we talked about earlier this month. The other decapitation scene that we saw. In what was it? The Killing Death.
The Killing Death with the was it a fruit of some sort?
It was a watermelon, right?
A watermelon.
He hollowed out a watermelon.
Yes, that's right, with a wig on it.
Yeah. So this one, it's a much more effective opening kill.
It was.
So the killer manages to grab a hold of the victim that he's stalking in the first couple of minutes of the film, severs her head off, and then holds it up against the light, which is an incredibly effective way of hiding the effects.
They use the shadow work. to their benefit.
Yeah, and the outcome is actually, it's pretty realistic.
It was pretty spooky.
Yeah, it was really pretty well done. I gotta say, like,
it had a nice thud when it hit the floor.
It did have a nice thud when it hit the floor.
I gotta say, throughout this film, especially for a film of this budget, I was pretty impressed with the effects throughout. Almost the entirety of it. There were a couple where I was like, okay, all right, I can see the budget constraints there.
Right.
But
considering some of the stuff that we've seen this month, I think it was the most impressive.
I gotta say, the editing was superior to pretty much everything we witnessed this month.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that helps the effects, like the gore effects in this, is him knowing what the budget's permitting.
Right.
Right.
So the camera cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Or the shots themselves that kind of work around.
He knew his limitations, right? And so then worked within those restraints.
The one that stood out to me happens later where the guy gets his head crushed by the cinder block.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty effective, too.
The way that shot is done and the way that cuts work, it's it's making the most with your limited resources, and it did a really good job with it.
Yeah, you know what it kind of reminded me of? There were a few of the gore scenes that reminded me a bit of early Peter Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hit like that whole like bad taste.
Uh-huh.
Especially the cinder block scene that you're talking about. Like there was, you could tell there's a lot of influence from mm-hmm. those kinds of movies, or Burning Moon. That's another one. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that.
Not seen Burning Moon.
It's a got like early 80s, I think, maybe late 70s, early to mid 80s, I think, though. German movie.
Okay.
It's really just a gore film. and it's kind of along the same lines. There's a little bit more of a plot to that film than there is in this one, but this one's just, like I said, it's a slasher. It doesn't really need too much of a plot,
right?
But there's a lot of really creative gore effects in that, and this is, it's just, I can see bits and pieces that are kind of like, I don't want to say homages, because he really seems to kind of like taken them as inspiration and made his own type of effects and camera work and stuff, but you can tell that he's got a lot to kind of take influence from.
Right.
And I really appreciated the way that Robert Elkins really kind of handled that. There were some really standout scenes. One of the big things that I didn't appreciate about this film, and Alex, you commented on this as well, the acting was actually not too bad throughout the entirety of the film.
No, it wasn't.
One thing that when we had spoken to Robert, one thing he told us is that there wasn't too much of a script going in on this.
Okay.
That a lot of the scenes were either ad-libbed or kind of like predetermined a little bit before they shot,
uh-huh.
but they didn't really have line for lines
right.
going on for a lot of these scenes. So the actors' improvisations, actually, I think it kind of helped add to the kind of overall sense of genuineness isn't really a word, but that's what I'm going to go with.
Right.
To each scene, because they're kind of just like having conversations and trying to forward the scenes given the limited knowledge that they have about each scene.
I think in comparison,
it makes for moments.
Right. Well, especially in comparison to a movie like The Killing Death, where I feel like it was very heavily scripted.
Right, right.
Where, you know, in some parts that was of benefit because it was really funny
right.
and meant to be funny. Whereas I think this movie was sort of the opposite of that. And its strength was in sort of the characters ad-libbing and coming up with a more casual conversation. It seemed more organic that way.
It did. Yeah, it did.
Because this movie did not try and be funny.
No, it didn't. there were a few funny moments, but they were kind of unintentional.
Yes. This was not a funny movie.
Yeah. It was very much trying to just be a
slasher.
Yeah, a standard slasher film. It really tried to be as no holds barred as it could be with the budget that it had. I mean, we got some pretty gruesome effects. The biggest kill, I think, in the entire movie was after they get to Freddy's bar and they're getting ready to close things down. The cook?
The cook,
yeah. Oh, the cook, yeah.
Yeah, he gets his fingers lopped off. That's and he right. gets gutted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty obvious that the guts are just like long slices of like fruit roll up or something, but it's still effective. It's pretty effective for a movie of this kind of budget. But the finger scene itself, it was a quick edit, a very, very quick edit, but it was well timed and well done. And that kind of thing reminded me a lot of the old Friday the 13th movies.
Yes.
Or like Burning or something like that, where it was just like,
I did get the Burning vibes a lot from this also.
Yeah. Just
although
like,
they weren't in like a camp, it's still kind
of. Yeah, I mean, like, but I think those were the big influences, right? Like, obviously, Texas Chainsaw.
I got a little bit of Halloween just with the mental escape, mental patient kind of thing.
Yeah, silent protagonist or antagonist and stuff, kind of like going through and everything. But and he was a pretty slow stalking killer. He didn't really run or anything like that. He was always just kind of like, he would just suddenly appear behind
people. Yeah.
But there were some pretty funny parts, too. So it's not to say it was completely devoid of humor. There's one scene, like I said, going back to Freddy's Place Bar. The patrons are all drinking. One girl, Becky, is kind of focused on with the camera. And she's just downing bourbon like it's her fucking job.
Is that where she then jumps on the pool table and starts dancing?
Starts taking off her clothes for like no reason.
I love this song. Oh, my God. And the song is not even like a song. It's just like one of those generic, free songs. It's just tones.
It's just some like generic like new metal riff going on in the background.
It's amazing.
And she just takes off her top and then is suddenly like, oh, I don't feel good. And just goes back to the bathroom and passes out.
So there were a couple of moments in Freddy's Bar that like, that one, for example, when she's on the pool table dancing, right, and there's the ceiling fan right above her. Uh-huh. I kept waiting for her hair to get caught and her head to get ripped off. She had
some long ass hair too.
She did have some long ass hair.
In my head, I was just like, her hair is gonna get caught in the ceiling fan. Her head's gonna get ripped off.
I don't think they had that in the budget.
No, I'm gonna go ahead and say no.
The other one was after he guts the cook. Uh-huh. And he's standing there, and you see the mop girl kind of walk by, and he's standing there holding the intestines.
Yeah.
I was really hoping he was going to use it as, like, a whip to, like, catch it.
That would have been good.
But, yeah, she has a bit of a, well, I guess the owner, Freddie himself, who's played by the writer and director of this film, he has a moment where he calls Gus, or he gets a call from Gus.
Yeah.
When Gus is looking for beer on credit, because apparently that's a
that's
thing.
That's a thing in rural Virginia. Yeah,
he's not just looking for beer on credit. He's looking for a whole case of
maybe
beer
Freddy's
on credit.
Maybe Freddy's is like a Chesterfield version of Cheers.
Maybe.
Right, right. And so...
They're all three people.
He gets, he
they
gets
all
off,
know your name.
He gets off the phone with Gus, and... he's talking about, he flips on the TV, we get our first kind of introduction to this, the fact that there's missing girls going right on here.
Well, you
there's
forgot that he threatens superimposed Gus with a shotgun over the phone.
Oh, yeah. Come
can
over
you hear
here
that? Can you hear that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just poorly superimposed TV screen on top of the TV screen. And this is kind of where we get the first introduction of this missing girls element, right? People are going missing. Nobody knows what's going on with them. There's news reports about it. And the immediate question or the immediate comment that comes out of Freddie's mouth is, oh, I know those two girls. I last saw them with Gus.
Right.
So now we have kind of Gus as this initial red herring, right? Mm-hmm. So you immediately suspect that Gus is probably responsible for this in some way, shape, or form.
It would fit.
It would fit. And I did like that. I did like that the fact that this movie tried to incorporate some element of mystery to it.
Yes.
Even though it didn't really pursue it or capitalize on it in any way.
No.
I like the fact that it tried.
Yes.
I would say that would probably be my first... I don't even really... It's constructive criticism, I think.
Yeah.
Put something more like that into it next time when you... Like... I think, especially with slashers, one of my favorite parts is always kind of trying to pick out the red herring.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out who might possibly be the killer.
That's such a huge part about slasher movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, the great thing about slasher versus, like, taking it like a traditional mystery, right,
uh-huh,
is that when they finally do reveal the killer, it's never somebody that you would have ever put together. Like, think about Scream, for instance.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the first time you watch Scream,
like,
and
what?
it turns out that duo is the killer.
There's two of them?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, one, it's two of them, and two, it's just like, well, those were the last fucking two idiots that I ever expected it to be.
Even though Randy called it.
He did call it. But
RIP, Jamie.
I enjoy it when there's that element of, well, we don't know who the fuck it is, and it could literally be any of them.
Right.
And so it attempts to capitalize that on that a little bit at the beginning. It ends up, like I said, falling on, or not really falling on its face in that regard, but just not pursuing it anymore after that point. But I would have liked to see a little bit more of that. But it does seem to be focused a lot more on the kills and the graphics the special effects and stuff. And there are plenty of other ones as well. We get a bunch of kills kind of spliced in between all the story elements. The story elements, like I said, are light, but the house itself seems to be the killing floor, the killing zone for all these people.
Mm-hmm.
We get the slasher or the second. What is it? Like a couple, right? The one of them takes a leak. That's when the cinder block thing happens. And then the woman that he's with gets stabbed to death in the back.
Yes. Yep.
We have the other bartender patron who stumbles across the killer burying a body in the middle of the swamp or in the woods.
Yes.
And
Which you can assume is near the house.
Yeah. And he gets the shovel to the back, right?
Yeah. He gets pinned to the tree.
That's right.
The friends that Sarah recruits to kind of help her find her sister, Tara, they all get stabbed to death. But it's all kind of like generic with them, right?
Yeah, they weren't super creative.
There wasn't a whole lot in terms of like... It just kind of goes from... I think this might have been more of a budget thing than it was anything else. And if it's not, then I'm just going to go ahead and blame it on budget. Because... we get really creative kills. Well, not necessarily creative, but we get gory and kind of glorified kills, and then it just kind of turns into generic stabbings.
It kind of reminds me of, like, in Star Trek, you know what I mean? Where they have, like, those random people.
The red shirts?
Yeah, the red shirts.
That they have. They're all just the red shirts just going down.
Like, and John, you go, too, and you're like, oh, John's totally going to die. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what it felt like towards the middle.
Yeah.
Is that they were just kind of sending people in there randomly, and the kills weren't uber creative.
Yeah.
It was more just to up the kill count, I guess, and make it a little bit more excited, or exciting rather, but
yeah, because I mean,
poor
by the time
shirts.
You get halfway through the movie, you quickly realize that aside from the sister, if somebody's introduced in the movie, they got about 10 minutes of screen time tops.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That everybody in this movie is disposable.
It kind of seems like he had a lot of people that he wanted to be in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like he had, I don't know, like a lot of friends or people that he had wanted to work with. And so he kind of promised a role to too many people.
Maybe.
And then had to do something with all of those characters. It just seemed a little like he could have fleshed out some of the characters and done a little bit more storyline.
Yeah, because like some of them don't make sense. Like the one that gets his head crushed with the cinder block and the lady that's with him, like, there's not really a point to them in the movie.
No, it's just...
Yeah, aside from upping the body count.
Yeah.
I think he more just had, like, this is a good idea. This could be a fun
effect
to experiment with. Let's see what we can do with it.
Yeah.
And again, like, as you mentioned with, like, Peter Jackson and Bad Taste. Like,
there's plenty of that shit in Bad Taste.
Because he's... Robert Elkins, if I'm not mistaken, has done a bunch of movies, like indie stuff, since this.
Okay.
He's done, what, like 6 or 7 other films, right?
Yeah.
I think
or at least
that
he told us about.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, you know, some of it might not make sense in the scheme of, like, the story.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, fuck it. Try out stuff. That's what the whole point of doing these indie films is about.
Exactly.
For sure. So let's talk about kind of the other story element, Gus himself. Turns out he's not too much of a red herring. He is actually participating in these kills. So he comes across Tara, takes her from her car, puts her in his car, says he's going to take her over to the auto mechanic, acts like his car is breaking down, gets out to try to deal with it. She gets out to try to help. He just grabs her, throws her in the trunk of the car,
her in the trunk,
and
then
leaves her near the house.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Gus has kind of been taking people that he runs into or people that, you know, I guess don't really have anywhere to go and leaves them at the house in order
closer
for this guy.
By,
in order for this killer to basically have fun.
Future Ben feeding his ravenous future dog.
We commented on the fact that it looks like her husband and like Alex's husband in 40 years.
You know, it's really funny, too, because when I was watching it, when he was asking a Tara or Sarah, I don't remember which one it was, if she could hear the noise in his truck or his car. Yeah. Ben always does that. He's, could you hear that? Did you hear that noise? So I also kind of thought that he was like Ben, but not in that way. You guys made him seem so much creepier.
Yeah.
Poor Ben.
We only sort
that guy also
Ben.
Has a lot more hair than my wonderful husband.
That's true. This one does have a rather full head of hair.
That's Ben with a nice toupee or something.
Wearing a good toupee.
So yeah, he is the kind of catalyst for a lot of these killings. Or at least he seems to be. And so it's finally revealed that he used to work at a mental, or I guess an asylum.
Right.
The asylum's getting ready to close because it lost funding, and he became friends with one of the patients there.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't think this patient was a bad guy, even though he's a horrible, sadistic killer.
Right. He clearly is a murderer.
And so he decided that he was going to put him in the middle of nowhere where he couldn't do anything bad, quote unquote. He would just give him stuff, people that he could have fun with.
Right.
And it would appease him. So they kind of worked together as a team.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so...
it's very, like, Criminal Minds.
Yes, yes. And so the film kind of does the stereotypical slasher trope. It ends the final victim kind of... Does she get away? I can't remember.
Yeah, she survives.
Yeah, so she survives.
She's bound to the chair and she gets out of the ropes.
That's right.
That's right.
And then
she
manages to get her hands on the shotgun.
And shoots at him a whole bunch of times with the terrible after effects.
Yeah, shoots at him, like, 4 or 5 times and then lights the house on fire.
The house on fire.
Yeah. And yeah, that's right.
And then Cropsey is born.
Yep.
Yes. And so we cut to a news reporter reporting on the incident a couple of days later. And the killer all of a sudden appears out of nowhere, takes out the two reporters, and that's the end of the film.
Yeah. I liked the ending.
Yeah. It's a pretty standard blow-by-blow slasher experience, yes. Right? And it was interesting seeing one of these shot through the perspective of somebody with next to no budget, minimal experience, but a pretty good grasp on editing, yep. And a pretty good grasp on delivering kills.
Yes.
Also, the one thing, Freddy's dumping, or not Freddy, Gus is grabbing all these people and dropping them off. Because it's Eddie's birthday.
It is Eddie's
That's
birthday.
Right.
Their birthday, they're all little birthday presents to Eddie.
Happy yes. birthday, Eddie.
Happy
the
birthday,
best,
Eddie.
The best birthday presents Eddie can get.
It's, like you said, they're toys. It's new toys for Eddie.
Yes.
So deranged.
They could have called this movie Eddie's Toys.
Oh my God, it should have been Eddie's Toys.
Yeah, I agree with you, though. I think they're really good signs with, like, the editing. Like editing and the special effects. Mm-hmm. The one thing that just killed me was the audio.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, it was. But you know that also seemed to have been like kind of a running theme with all these movies.
Yeah,
I can't imagine how hard audio must be, because especially when you think about the second movie that we covered this mm-hmm. month, that movie had a much much higher budget.
Yeah.
Much higher budget, and it still had. God. Really bad audio.
Well, yeah. I think the audio in that was good. I think the choices they made were poor.
No, because the whole thing sounded like a dub. We talked about that last week.
Well, no, there were parts where they intentionally did the vocal audio replacement last week. Like, that was an intentional choice. Because they thought it made him seem crazy. That's and it was right. just a really bad choice.
But
at least in that movie, like and again, it's probably a budgetary thing. Like mm-hmm. the audio was synced.
Yeah.
And the levels were balanced. Like in this, there were certain parts where,
didn't even seem like it was synced up.
Like it either wasn't synced up true. Or the dialogue audio was way down uh-huh. and everything else was super loud.
Yeah, the effects audio was higher. And
then also the sound choices, the song choices were pretty bad.
Well, yeah, I mean,
yeah, we're getting real songs,
stock songs that don't cost anything.
Yeah, but getting I mean, real songs cost a bunch of money.
I know, but there are also thousands to choose from. That's true. I deal with stock audio on the regular.
Well, we actually mentioned this when we saw Three from Hell. Is that the one song that they put in there that we were like, that's probably half the budget of the movie right there.
Oh, geez. What the fuck song was it? Oh, man. Yeah, there was a point where this one song comes on. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
Would it be a song that you would recognize, though?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. 100%. House of the Rising Sun? No.
No, that was on the... That's the Endless.
It's like, here, I'm pulling it up right now.
It's got like a ridiculously long like jam session in the middle of the uncut version. There's like a it's like notorious because there's a radio cut of it. It's like 4 minutes long, and then the
Iron Butterfly. Is it Inagana DeVita?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That song costs a lot of fucking money
Does
to get.
Does it though?
Yeah.
It might not. Sometimes they have weird things.
Where, see,
like,
that was the thing. It's like we were like, well, maybe Rob Zombie has a pool uh-huh. because he's a music artist that he was able to get it. But normally the rights to that song costs a lot of money. I looked over at Sam and I was like, this was like a quarter of this film's budget right here.
Remember we watched a movie a little while ago and... I forget what movie it was. And it was, there was a part where the girl was singing this song and it ended up
the
being
Endless.
Like, what one?
The Endless?
No, it wasn't that song. It was a different one. And it ended up being like, oh, maybe it was that. Was it that movie? Either way, yes.
But it changed like certain notes? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, no. It was a different movie where they actually took the song and it ended up being like a third of their budget.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I feel like, there are lots of choices for stock songs.
I actually don't think it was Inagata DeVita because it's not showing up on IMDb. Well,
it was definitely Inagata DeVita.
Because that's like a 10-minute song, and then the radio edits like.
Because he played it during the entirety of that act, and I was just like, "Yep, this is the long jam version." I wonder if that one cost less money than the radio
maybe.
Edit.
Maybe the one with just the jam sesh.
Yeah, it was because it's playing as like the. I'm not going to talk about the spoilers of that.
Okay.
Movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yep.
But yeah,
that movie, it was there.
Well, that song was definitely in the movie.
Funny.
That song costs a lot of money to get. But yeah, I can understand the audio issues, I guess, with that kind of thing. I will say, like I said, the biggest things that impressed me, the editing.
Yes.
The ability to come up with creative ways to hide the effects.
And
still make it seem
good.
Like visceral and gory.
Mm-hmm.
those are the two biggest bright moments of this. And I think when you're looking for something from an indie slasher, what else are you going to really ask for?
Right.
Yeah.
The storyline was relatively good. It was engaging. And I thought the characters were...
It kept the things going. Yeah. It kept the plot points moving, I think.
And the actors that had longer than 10 minutes on screen, I think, had pretty good story arc.
Yeah.
I appreciate they that acting. They're the only ones that got names.
Yes. That's true.
Final thoughts?
I liked it. It's free on YouTube. I would definitely recommend anyone watch it.
Yeah, we'll I will talk to Robert about it just to make sure we've got permissions to do it. But if he gives us permission, we'll put the link up on the podcast description, and people can just check it out on their own time.
Yeah.
It's honestly, you can come up with a worse way to kill an hour and 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
I did not do what I did with last week's movie where I checked to see how long it was going to be.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, it just kind of ran through for me.
It's paced pretty well.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It was paced well.
Review-wise, how many fuck you Gusses are we giving this?
No, man. I want cases of beer on credit, please.
Cases of hurricane.
Did you see when the killer's walking out of the bar, it's a case of hurricane.
Cases of hurricane on credit.
Malt liquor.
Yeah. How many... hurricanes are we getting this?
This is a hurricane on credit. I'll give it 2.5.
2.5?
I'll give it a 2.
A 2?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 2.25, which puts it at a 2.25, I believe.
All right.
So yeah, there it is. 2.25 for us on this. A great introduction to Robert's stuff. We're going to be seeing more of it here shortly in the 48-hour upcoming... When is that again?
So the 48-hour horror film festival is, I think...
Sometime in October.
October, I think it's sometime. October,
like the second weekend in October is when the time is to shoot it. And then they're showing them, I think, it's either 1 or 2 weeks later.
Okay.
Sometime around Halloween.
Yeah, I'll get...
Over at the Bird, right?
Yeah, yes. I'll get the actual dates together, though, so we can... share that around.
Yeah. Thank you as always to all, well, to everybody who shared their films with us this month.
Yes,
it was a lot of fun checking this stuff out.
It was so much fun.
You know, I know some of the stuff might have come across as a little harsh, but hopefully we did well with it. And it was fun.
And honestly, what do we know? We just sit here.
Yeah, right.
It's like we're out there making movies.
I think I specifically even told Palmer, if you gave me $10,000, I still couldn't make Robert made with this.
Yeah. No, that's probably true. I
would waste all my movie. I would waste all my money on like one song.
In a Gata Vida.
Have the best songs.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And that'll wrap it up. We'll start up with finish up with the housekeeping. You can reach us on all the social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at Terror Incognito. You can email us also at cast@terrorincognito.com. Have thoughts, opinions, questions?
I love reading your emails.
Yeah, let us know. We always enjoy hearing from you guys. So be sure to keep that stuff coming. Next week is our 100th episode. We're still working on the special stuff, but we're getting down to the nitty gritty. I think we're finally hammering out the details.
That's right.
It'll be fun. I think we're going to do a little bit of a different format for our 100th episode, but we're going to
play some games, maybe.
Yeah. So that would be another fun thing. You know, if there are questions that you guys have for us that you want us to read off on the cast, reach out. Let us know.
Do you want to know whose farts smell the worst? Ask us.
It's Alex.
We'll tell you.
That's totally the answer right now.
This cat right here next to me. If it smells like I shit my pants, it's actually her.
Okay.
That's fair enough.
I just farted right now.
I'm going to end this cast so I can get at it. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, 100th episode next week. We look forward to having fun with that. And then we're going to have to pick a new theme and discuss all that at the end of the next episode.
That's
We're too busy trying to figure out what the hell we're going to do for our 100th episode shenanigans, I guess.
It might just be you and me after that. There's a potential for that.
There is a potential. Because at any point now, you could pop.
I could.
So, I'm just gonna scare Alex into labor next week.
I've already started reaching out to people about rotating third chair possibilities. Okay. We've gotten a couple of people that have said that would be happy to be on. So,
great.
Yeah, it'll be a rotating third chair. Nobody will ever replace you.
That's fine.
But they will.
It's only temporary until Alex can get away long enough to get hammered.
Yeah.
Yep.
What we'll do is we'll leave old man Ben with the child. And Alex will just come and record.
Perfect.
And it'll be great. All right, everybody. Until next week.
Keep it creepy.
Take care. Thank you.